Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. I have an interview today with a member of actually a Northside group called the Fugitives, so my theme song wasn't really appropriate for today. But it should be an interesting interview, so you should keep tuned. So do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Michael Sharkey from the near north side of Chicago.
Were you born in Chicago?
Yes, I was.
So how where did you live first? Like what streets?
Well, myself, I what's that address where you live?
1500 block of Mohawk.
Right. I was 1527 North Mohawk. That's near North Avenue.
Okay.
Yes, almost to Lincoln Park.
Okay.
And I was born and raised on that block.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you first get involved with music?
Well, I was influenced by my brother. My brother became a musician at an early age.
So did you, were you ever singing in church before then?
Yes.
Okay.
Churches, we were church oriented.
So you had a story about how your brother got involved with music, right?
Yes. He was interested in guitar, and there was on the same block, there was an older guy. He had to be like 75 or maybe almost 80. And, He played guitar. He played Delta blues.
Okay.
And my dad was interested in learning blues. You know, the older guys love blues. And so Pops, the guy name is Pops, and he...
That was the 75-year-old?
Yeah, okay. 75. And he was kind of demonstrating some things to my father. So my brother was interested one day. He walked down there where they were, because they would sit on the front, you know, in front of the house, and Pops would bang the Delta blues, and my brother would, he would draw a crowd, and my brother went down there one day. Pops, can you teach me?
So and, you did know. Your dad ever learn how to play?
Yeah, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll never forget the song that he played. The progression of the way he played the first blues song, yeah.
So one day your brother went, your oldest brother went and saw them playing and got excited about it.
Yeah, he got excited. Mm-hmm.
What was the name of your brother that did that?
His name is Eugene.
Eugene?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how did he start playing after that? Did he have an instrument?
Well, after... well, my father actually had a guitar, and he would allow him to use it since he was interested. So he would go down and get lessons from Pops, you know.
So did he actually become good at the Delta, playing Delta blues?
Yeah, he got mad. This very day he plays like B.B.
Okay, that's cool.
He loved blues. He really wasn't interested in jazz or anything like that, but he could play R&B and different things like that, you know.
So, how did the... first of all, was the Fugitives the first group that all of you were in?
Yeah, the first group.
How did the Fugitives form?
My brother, after he advanced a little more, there was a fella across the street. His name was Roger Samaroo. And Rog could play drums, a little bass, you know. And a little guitar, and he wanted my brother to, you know, kind of school him a little bit. And they got together and started learning different, you know, cover songs.
So originally it was just two guys?
It was two guys.
Do you know if they had a name at that point?
They didn't have a name.
Okay.
Excuse me. They didn't have a name. I guess they thought... they got so good at it, they decided, you know, they wanted to to get him a name going and start a band.
Do you know how old your brother was back then?
He had to be, he's 5 years older than me, so he had to be maybe about 9 years old.
So at 9 years old, they were starting a band.
Started a band.
That's cool. So did they get anybody else for their band at the time?
No one.
So it was just two guys?
Two guys.
Okay.
And then later, like I said, other guys came. You know.
So when it was just two guys, was it one person playing guitar, one person on drums?
Yeah, something like that.
And did they ever perform anywhere? Or?
No, they didn't.
So how
Joyride, you know.
How did the group expand? Like who joined and what happened?
I was the next fella.
Okay.
That joined, and I was interested in drums. You know.
So you were the third member, and how old were you when you joined the group?
I was about four.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you must have been excited.
Man. Very.
But you said you were playing drums. Did you have a drum set?
No.
So how did you play drums?
Okay, that's the story. What happened was my mom would wash clothes, and she had those little pins, clothes pins that you hang clothes on the line. You know, back then they would, instead of a dryer, they would put them outside. And so she had a bunch of them. And so what I would do, I would go in the drawer and get me a couple of clothespins out. And I started beating, you know, just beating. But I didn't just beat. I had a little rhythm.
Were you beating on like a bucket or something?
I would beat on anything. Okay. I would beat on someone's head. No, I'm just joking. But I just started beating and on tables. And I assumed now that I'm older, that they was tired of me beating on their furniture and tables, and, you know.
So, initially you were in the band and you were just kind of hitting things with some clothes.
Yeah,
pins.
But it had a rhythm. It would, you know.
And your brother was playing your dad's guitar.
Yeah.
And did the other guy?
He was, like I said, he was versatile. You know,
did he have a bunch of instruments?
He had instruments at home.
Okay. So how did the group kind of evolve after that? Like, did you ever get a real drum set?
Yeah. That's the story also. what happened when my father saw that I could do it, he said, well, I'm going to give him. I guess he was gradually trying to see if I could handle it, you know. So he bought me, like, one snare and one cymbal. That's all I had. Stomped my feet. That was it. No bass drum or anything.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So but your band was becoming still more mature. Like
right.
People were getting
right.
Real instruments. Like what types of songs were you playing back then?
The Beatles. Okay. We did songs also. Who was that? Wipeout.
I know the song. I can't think of who did it.
Beach Boys, I think.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. But that's the song that was popular at that time. And
So did you play any R&B music too?
Somewhat. We did blues, you know, because that was the originality of the beginning, you know. So we did a little blues here and there, and you know, and then. Wipe out a couple of other rock songs.
So were you just playing in one of your basements?
Yeah, we played in my father's basement.
So when did you actually when did you start doing shows? Do you remember your first show?
First show had to be at the Navy Pier. There was an event going on, and they had all kind of rock bands there. And we began to, my father actually got us to show there, you know.
Do you remember how old you were when you played Navy Pier?
About five.
Okay.
Yeah.
So And you played rock music.
Yeah, we did. Like I said, Wipeout. It's been so long, I can't even remember, but it was a lot of the flower power type, you know.
And era. Were you the only kiddie group there?
Yeah.
How did people respond to that?
I mean, we got a response, a great response out of it.
And you still didn't have a bass drum, a kick?
Well, what happened when we got ready to do the show, you know, those bands allowed you to use their instruments. So it was a double bass drum.
Okay.
And I don't know how it happened, but I did it because I had never played.
Yeah, I've tried to play one and I couldn't.
Yeah, I had never played one before, yeah.
So that's, you must have been excited.
I was excited.
So I know you ended up cutting a few records. Your first record was called Love Come Down. I want to play the music because we've been talking for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we could get into the story of what happened after that show. And the
okay.
Band. So this song is The Fugitives. And this track is called Love Come Down.
Yeah.
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM. Sorry, there's a microphone problem for a second. In Chicago, that was just The Fugitives with Love Come Down. Having microphone problems right now. Hopefully I could get it. So right now we're down to one mic. So that record, how old were you when that record came out?
I was 9 years old.
So that was 4 years since you did that Navy Pier show.
Yes.
So did the lineup change? Like, you initially only had three people. Can you go through the changes in the lineups and how they happened to that point?
After the Navy Pier situation, a lot of people from the West Side wanted to join the group. So we had other young men that was interested. And my father, he was the guy that gave everybody a chance. So we had about 7 guitar players, and no joke. I mean, this is serious. But they came and joined the group, and then we had those fellas to leave. And so at that time, my brother, in between the time, we were playing like at little clubs, you know. And we would play blues in clubs.
So you were only like six years old and going to clubs?
Yeah, about 6 years old.
Do you remember the clubs you were playing with at that time?
I don't offhand know the name of those earlier clubs. The more advanced clubs was later. But these were little clubs like on California, Lake Street.
Like small spaces.
Holland Wolf. Had one right on California.
Okay.
It was California Lake, so the other one was a little further east that we played, so we would switch places, but Holland Wolf put us out. You know, it was like, they're too young. Don't get those, you know, I don't know if you saw Cadillac Records, but he was actually like that for real. Kind of mean guy, and he says, get those so-and-so.
So would you? You were 5 years old. Would you stay up really late for the club shows?
We would go home at least at 10:30.
Okay.
And we did like almost matinee type early events, you know.
But at that time, you were playing more R&B because they were like black clubs.
Yeah, and they just gave us a chance to, you know, see what type of response we would get from the audience, you know. So.
Do you remember some of the songs you played?
Well, I know one that I did. It was like, I was saying, it was called Oh Baby, You Don't Have to Go by Jimmy Reed.
Okay.
I was a little like this fella, and I would sing the blues. I could play a little guitar, and I would sing that, and the people just loved it.
So when you were playing the clubs, was it the original three members? Or
it was the original three members.
So there was probably a lot of people that, you know, would try to play with you for a short period of time. And
yeah, it was. A lot of people.
So did the lineup stabilize and become like a specific set of people?
Yes.
So when did that happen and who were they?
That was Eddie Manning stepped in, and then there were four. And then he got better and better. And then
what did he play?
Bass.
Okay.
Bass. And then that kind of fattened the band up a little bit. You know, two guitars and a bass player.
Okay.
And so then later a fella came to my father and he said, there's a young guy who lives in Cabrini Green that can really, really sing. And so he plays a little music too, you know. And the old man says, "Yeah, I'd like to meet this guy." You know, at the time he didn't know that the fella was, you know, related to us, you know. And he came. The guy brought him over. I never forget the guy's name. His name was Clarence, and Clarence brought the guy over, and he demonstrated how he could sing, and he did a great job, you know, and he became our lead singer.
What was his name?
Archie Brooks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell, say the lineup of when after he joined, that was like your first real lineup, is that right?
Yeah.
Can you say who all the members were and what instruments they played?
Okay. Archie played guitar. Eddie played bass. My brother would play lead. And I was the drummer. At that time, Roger had left.
So you had two guitars?
Yeah, two guitars and one bass.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So then you ended up...
Sort of a rhythm section.
You ended up actually recording a record. How did you get hooked up with a record label?
We were at a club. I can't recall what club it was at the time. But we met McKee Fitchew, was from WVON, and he was interested in our band. And then I might have it backwards. But anyway, we ran into this guy named Sandy Wilborn. My father talked with him, and I guess he was starting a new label. And he was looking for talent. By us being young, you know, that made it more interesting, you know. So from there, he decided, he said, well, I want to record your band, you know.
Yeah, I think you were the first act on his label.
Yeah,
we were talking about how he recorded McKinley Mitchell.
Yeah.
And High Five.
High Five Wright. Yeah.
So that record, do you remember what year it was recorded?
The first record?
Yeah.
Like I said, I think it's either between 69 and 70.
Okay, and do you remember where you were when you recorded it?
In what perspective?
Like what studio?
Yes. I think we mentioned it was Apex.
Okay.
If I had it right.
Yeah, it was... The guy that ran that studio, I think his name was Sonny Sawyer, but it might be a different...
It might be,
yeah.
So,
did you record everything in one day, both sides?
Yeah, we did. You know, back then, you know, I guess budget or whatever. I don't know, because I was so young. I was the youngest, you know. And so, one take.
Okay.
You know, we did all the rehearsals at home, you know. And when we would do the rehearsals, we'd make sure that it was tight and well put together, you know, so that we wouldn't make too many mistakes when we go to the studio.
Okay.
And so we did have a great arranger.
Yeah, because I noticed there's strings on it.
Yeah, that was Mark Davis. Oh, yeah. Later
he went to Motown, right?
Yeah, he went to Motown, and he was out in... what is that, in California there, and he became a producer along with Norman Whitfield to produce Which Way's Up and Car Wash, and he was a great musician.
Yeah, he was definitely a talented guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, one thing that's interesting about the record is there's actually, at least on that side, a female lead singer.
Yes.
How did that happen? What's the story with that?
Okay, that's when the group broadened a little more. Archie actually had a family group, which was consisted of his three sisters and him and his father. Father was a guitar player, so they sung in church. And, you know, Archie began to tell my father about his sisters. And from there, they joined the group, you know.
So they were actually members of the Fugitives, or...?
Yeah, they were members.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's the name of the sister that's singing on that record?
Scotty. Her name is actually Betty. Betty Jean Scott.
And we were talking about, they actually ended up, she ended up being in her own female group later recording, right?
Yes.
as Betty Scott and the Del Vets.
Right.
So how long had she been in your group before you made that recording?
I have to really say that last maybe even from Archie, it had to last maybe 4 years altogether.
Okay.
Because when the band broke up, I had to be like 12 or 13, something like that.
And who's singing on the B-side, Good Lovin', If You Can Get It?
That's Betty. That's Scotty, yes.
So she sings on both sides?
Both sides.
So that record, did it get play in Chicago?
That side, I don't think so.
But the Love Come Down side?
Yeah, that's the A-side, Love Come Down.
Did that get play in Chicago?
Yes, it did, WVON.
So did you start... Like, how start doing more shows or getting more popular? Because
we did. Yeah, we started doing more traveling, and you know, wherever the record went, I guess we had to go.
So you traveled within the city, or did you ever travel and leave?
Leave Chicago.
Where are some of the places you went?
Wow, we had to go like in Illinois. It was like almost all of the western suburbs, like Aurora. We did go to Wisconsin, you know.
Were they all black clubs that you played at?
Well, some of them were mixed.
Okay.
And then we had to do, like, banquets, you know.
The people hired your band.
They hired us, yeah.
Even though you were all really little.
You were little.
So.
Well, I was little, I think.
And did you didn't miss any school, did you? Like, were you practicing out after school and doing shows, or what happened?
I went to George Manier. That's on Cleveland Hudson in Cleveland. And started there and graduated eighth grade, and my brother went there, you know. But when we got to a point that we were busy, you know, I was the only one that didn't go to private school. I had to go to Manier, so that's when we wasn't busy. But during the time we were busy, they tried to work around my schedule because I had to go to school.
Okay.
You know, but the other boys, they went.
They're more flexible.
Yeah, yeah.
So you ended up recording a second record called Rich Man, Poor Man.
Yeah.
Let me play the record because we've been talking for a while, and then we can talk about what happened with the record.
Okay.
Oh,
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today's a special show because I'm interviewing a member of the Chicago group called The Fugitives. That was just their second record called Rich Man, Poor Man. So, who was singing lead on that record?
Archie Brooks.
And was he really young still when he was singing?
If I was nine, he was 14.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I noticed one thing about the record is the style changed a lot. Like, especially in the other side of the record, it's even funkier. It sounds very James Brown-ish.
Yeah.
So how did your sound change?
Archie actually, he's a rhythm man also. I mean, he loved rhythm. He loved jazz, you know, and great guy. I mean, I admire him, and he was an influence on me, you know. But he loved James Brown also, you know, and I guess that was a choice that he made, and the guys just, I don't know, at that time, man, you just, whatever you felt, you know, it's just like jazz, it improv, you know,
so
prolifically, you know.
Was he just the singer, or did he play an instrument?
He could play an instrument. He could play drums, he could play a little bass, he could play, I don't know if he could play keyboards, but we never even taken on keyboards until after they left. But
so one thing I wanted to ask is, like, a lot of groups at the time, they would have like a dedicated singer or set of singers, and they would do choreography.
Yeah.
Did you do anything like that? I mean, it's probably very hard because you were playing instruments, but what were your shows like?
Well, that's a good story also. The rhythm of dancing came in actually after, but the girls, when they were in the group, they had their little steps, two-step or whatever, you know, waving their arms or whatever. But Archie was random, you know. He would do whatever he could do, you know.
Was he a good dancer too?
Archie, don't get mad, Archie, if you hear this, but I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Okay. And on that record, is it the same lineup as the first record?
Yeah, same people.
Except there were no girls singing?
No girls.
And how long after the first record did you record the second record?
Actually, right after. They released it later, but we did everything in the same day.
So you did all four songs in the same day?
Yeah, same day.
One thing that's interesting about that, the second record is, like, the first record got played in Chicago, but the second record is really rare, and you don't find it in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Maybe, do you know if there was problems with distribution, or do you have any idea what happened?
I don't have no clue.
Because it's a cool record.
It is. It's real nice, yeah.
So, you were talking about the group disbanding. Like, how long did you stay together under that lineup before the group changed?
Like I said, it had to be maybe 70 to 73 when we actually started breaking up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I know in another interview I did that Archie joined another group.
Yeah, he did. They were interested in just something occurred, I guess, and they wanted to leave. You know, I was so young. You know, I really didn't get full detail.
So, like, your brothers wanted to leave, you're saying?
My brother, that was his group. He's the founder. So, quite naturally, he wasn't going to leave it. But they did. The singers. We had another guitar player. His name was Henry Perkins. and he played rhythm for the band, and he wanted to leave. And I mean, I tell you what, this is what happened. We were left with just my brother, the founder, and me.
Okay,
that's the way it went.
So what happened? Did you get into more music?
Yes, we stayed in music. I mean, there was no stopping. And, you know, we was like the syndrome of the monkey syndrome. You know, we got to keep rolling, you know. And so because, you know, music is actually personally my love. Because I later became, you know, jazz musician, but yeah, we kept rolling, and my father decided. He said, "Well, fellas, I tell you guys, why don't you just take your little brother?"
Okay.
You know, he's like a year younger than me, but he couldn't do anything.
Okay.
I mean, he couldn't hit a lick, you know.
Okay.
But I was the one that pounded it in his head concerning playing. So he said, "I want to play keyboard." You know, so we taught him keyboard, and I always could play piano, you know, even as 4 years old. So I took that what I knew, but we still needed a drummer, so I had to keep playing drums. And so we took him and started training him. My brother trained him guitar, and I trained him bass. And he decided, you know, he didn't know which way. I play piano, I want to play bass, I want to make up your mind, you know, because we need a bass player. So we got it together. And man, when we finished with this guy, it had to be in him, because no one could learn to play that fast. You know, as quick as he did, he learned a lot.
Okay, it sounds like your whole family was just musical.
Yeah, the family, yeah.
So, did you keep the name The Fugitives at that point?
Well, before they left, we became The Fabulous Fugitives.
Okay.
Before they left, I believe. Yeah, something like that.
So, and I know The Fabulous Fugitives did a recording, which I'm going to play in a little bit. Did the group change even more before that recording?
Yeah, we kind of changed with... in between time when we was teaching, my brother, music was changing, you know. And there were people coming up. Larry Graham had left Sly, you know. And I was always crazy about Sly and the Family Stone. So I began to kind of observe them, you know, the style. And they were making money. So everybody were buying the records, so that meant that the audience liked that type of music, and so we went that way.
Yeah, it was almost. I'm going to play the record in a second. We can talk more about it, but it was almost like a psychedelic.
Yeah, type
sound.
Yeah,
but you could hear the influence in your record.
Yeah.
So what was the A side? Was it What the World Needs?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is. I'm going to play the record now and we can talk some more. This is The Fabulous Fugitives, and this track is called What the World Needs.
Yeah. talking about the crisis. I won't go today. They don't know we're moving, moving on out the way. What the world will find.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. This is the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in, I am doing an interview with a member of the Chicago group The Fugitives. That record that we just played was The Fabulous Fugitives with What the World Needs. And you could hear it was not only funky, but kind of like a conscious, political consciousness song, like Ball of Confusion or something like that.
Yeah.
So, first of all, how many years after the first record was that record recorded?
I'd say it's about 6 years.
So, and you had said that the group before that had disbanded and leaving you and your older brother, and you brought in your younger brother.
Yes, he came in. I'm sorry, you can finish.
No, that's...
Yeah, he came in and, like I said, we taught him and he really developed to be a great bass player. And later on, he died, you know. But
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Who else... Did anyone else join the group? Before that recording?
Well, during that time, we had to make that transition. My sisters, they joined the band, and they became background. My youngest sister, she was percussionist, and she could play a little bongos, you know, something like that. We just added everybody, you know, that we could in the family.
So but on that record, it's pretty much like four instrumentalists.
It's actually three instruments.
Okay.
We had other guys, which my father made me mad about. he passed also, but he made me mad because he brought in some guys that didn't rehearsal with us. And, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a perfectionist, but I do like things to be put together well, and I think they did a great job, you know, but I wanted maybe some other little things in it, you know.
Yeah, like I understand, like, musicians have to kind of perform together to get the chemistry.
Yes, get the feel, yeah.
So, one thing I always wondered about that record is I never realized it was Chicago Record connected to The Fugitives, because it came out on a Memphis label.
Yeah.
And the label was called J Ace, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, what's the story? How did you end up getting a record on a Memphis label?
Well, I met someone, and Mr. Wooten, he was running an ad. And the guy that I met, he told me about the ad, and I went from there and so called him, and we went out there.
It was an ad in a Chicago paper.
It was in a Chicago paper.
So you drove out there.
Yeah, we had a joyride, you know, enjoyed ourselves going out.
Do you remember, like, around what year it was recorded?
75.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
that guy's style, Wooten, he put out a lot of gospel records.
Gospel, yeah.
But I don't know if yours was the only secular record he did or if he did other
I'm
ones.
I'm really not sure. But they have a biography of him on the internet. And he worked with London Records, and, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a long story, but.
So you hooked up with him and you went over there, and what was the deal? Like, he just wanted material to put out on his label?
Well, I don't know what that situation was now that I'm older, as far as maybe he was just making a little money. You know, I don't know. Just, you know, how you, the day you can own your own studio and people call you up and, you know, they need someone to record, so. That's the way that I think that went, you know, at that time, you know.
So, but did you pay for the studio time?
Yeah, we paid for it.
And you were telling me that you had to do everything in one take? Or
yeah, budget.
Because the studio time was expensive?
Yeah.
So, on the record, I don't hear any girls.
Well, on What the World, you can hear a little background on there, and that's my sister's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you say the names of everybody who's on the record?
Yes. Eugene, which is the oldest member, the founder.
Eugene Sharkey?
Yes. Eugene Sharkey, all Sharkeys. Dorothy. Deborah. There's another Eugene who's playing a horn. I forgot his last name, but my brother knew him. You know, and he could play flute and sax. He was on. His name is Eugene Lee, or something like that. And then Gregory, which is the bass player, the bassist, the youngest, and me, myself, Michael.
So
on drums.
So that record was recorded in 75.
Yes.
How long had that version of the group been together?
Oh, well, that one is right after the other members left. That was like 72.
So you've been together about 3 years.
About 3 years.
And you had so many people. How did you get to Memphis? Did you have a van or something?
Yeah, we had about 3 vans.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you perform a lot in clubs in Chicago with that lineup?
Yeah, we did. We did a place, we did a video that we were doing cover songs, you know, and it was a place called Dingbat.
Okay.
Dingbat's on Ontario.
Okay.
It's a popular club. I mean, they always had a crowd, you know. People like the Gap Band would go in there and, you know, enjoy themselves. And yeah, it was a nice place.
Did you play any of the Southside clubs?
Well, with the other group, I don't mean to back up, but we did a lot of clubs in Chicago, a lot of hotels.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a lot of events, bar mitzvahs, banquets, you know, you name it, we got involved. And we still did things like that after they, you know, left the group.
Okay.
We did more traveling after they left. We were Cincinnati, we're St. Paul, Minnesota. We just did a lot of traveling.
So what types of, this is with the newer version of the group?
The newer version.
What types of places would you play when you went to those cities?
Clubs, wedding, events, you know, man, we were just everywhere.
Did you have a manager to help book shows?
My brother and my father became the group's manager.
Okay.
My father was always, you know, manager, you know.
And one thing I forgot to ask before is, do you know who wrote all the songs?
All of the songs?
Well, who wrote Love Come Came Down?
Sandy Wilborn and Eugene Sharkey Sr.
That's your dad or
my dad.
Okay. And who wrote Rich Man, Poor Man?
Sandy Wilborn.
Okay. And then the Fabulous Fugitives records. Who wrote those?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you recorded that record. It came out in like 75.
Mm-hmm.
Did it do anything? Like, did it even get played in Memphis, or what's the story?
I guess it got played in Memphis because Style Wooden, he was a very influential man. You know, but like I said, in those days, if you didn't know the business, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and what happened was we traveled, like I said, with the songs, and that was just basically it. But as far as exposure, at that time, I think it was a bit slow, but people liked it here and there, you know.
Yeah, probably didn't get distributed much outside of Memphis. Like,
right.
Like, you probably couldn't have heard it in Chicago or bought it.
Right, right.
So, how long did the group stay together after that record came out?
All the way up to 83.
Okay. And you just continued to do the types of shows that
you did? Yeah, we did a lot of shows that we always tried to do, you know.
And did the lineup stay the same?
Always the same. Since, you know, after that, it was just family.
And did you ever record anything, any other material that wasn't released?
We did a lot of stuff that wasn't released. Yeah.
Do you remember when that happened?
With the Fabulous Fugitives?
Yeah.
Yeah. During the same time, you know, just off and on, just in and out, you know, the studio. The earlier group had a lot of other stuff that wasn't released. You know.
Do you have tapes of any of it?
I don't have anything. A guy was telling me that that's the problem. I mean, you make these records and then you can't find your own record.
Yeah.
You know?
Or the tape isn't stored well.
Lost generation. Yeah,
yeah, just because I know there's probably people interested in hearing and maybe even putting out the material.
Right.
So the group stayed together until 83. And then, was there something specific that made it broke up, or people just kind of went their own direction?
People start, you know how it is, people begin to lose interest, and they have something just like Archie and Eddie, they had other interests on their mind, and they wanted to do something different. I mean, you can work on a job, and you can, you know, if it's not implanted in you as something you really want to do, you know, you do well if it's something you really want to do.
Okay.
But if you don't want to do it, it's like an entry-level job. I mean, man, I'm sick of this or whatever. So I think that's the way it was. And so my younger brother, he wanted to go another direction. And then my older brother, he was a trooper because he never wanted to give up.
I mean, it was his group.
That was his group, you know, so I had to leave because I was getting busy. I was doing things outside of the group.
Okay.
Because I developed a family.
Okay.
And so I had to take care of these guys, you know.
Okay.
So I had to have a little money, you know.
So did you continue to do music on the side when you had time?
Yes, I did. I did gospel. I did jazz here and there. You know, I would go out and do straight jazz or smooth jazz or whatever type of music required, R&B, you know, people hired me.
They would hire you to play with them in clubs or out?
Clubs,
were you a session
church.
Player?
You know, I was a regular church musician. I started getting back on my keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you do any session work?
I did session work with quartet groups, you know, the Victory Travelers, a lot of, you know, local gospel groups.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you're still doing music today, is that right?
Yeah, I never quit.
So I have with me a CD of some newer material.
Yeah.
Is it gospel?
No. It's like the New Jack Swing era.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you remember the name of the song I'm about to play?
Yeah, How You Like Me Now.
Okay, so, and is it just billed as Michael Sharkey?
Just me.
Okay, so I'll play one of your new track and we can talk some more afterwards.
All right.
You'll be my lady, you know, no need to say your name. I fell in love with you, and you're the blame. My heart never hit like a beat from a bass drum. You put my mind in a trance, and I'm stuck. Believe me, girl, you know what I'm about. And all I can say is, how you like me now? How you like me now? How you like me now?
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You're listening to the Sitting in the Park show right now. We are in the middle of an interview with Michael Sharkey, who is a member of Chicago group The Fugitives. And that track we just played was like a solo track. Do you remember when it was recorded?
1991.
And you played everything on that.
Everything.
Including the rap.
Kids you say.
And did you record it at home or in a studio?
In a studio. Where is that studio? South, 147. Good friend of mine.
And you were telling me there's some story behind the song being linked to a movie. What's that story?
Yeah, Mr. Dale Roberts is he's a writer, you know, producer of movies. And I guess he was just trying a project out. And the guy that played in All My Children, Jesse, he was the guy, you know, that was featured as far as the lead.
So the movie actually was made and came out?
It came out. They played at a theater downtown somewhere. Not the state or the Chicago, but it was another one over there. On the north side, I think.
So did they, like, commission your song and then you wrote
it
for the movie?
Well, you know, a friend of mine, we worked insurance together, and he's a great friend of Daryl. And Daryl gave me a chance. But what happened? They wound up using another song.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I mean, you get knocked down sometimes, you know.
But did they commission, like, even though they didn't use it in the thing, did they ask you to make the song for
yeah.
the movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the buddy went to him and he said, yeah, let's try it.
And one thing now that's interesting is another record label has reissued the Fabulous Fugitives record.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to mention that my son just reminded me. I do have a tape of GCI did play it.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, I got exposure.
The track we just played, you're
yes.
talking about. How did, like, you did you actually release it in some format?
In
like,
some form, yeah. In cassette.
Okay, and GCI yeah. played it from the cassette.
Yes, yes.
That's cool that you got airplay on it, though.
Yeah, I did.
I forgot what... I was just saying that your last record, the Fabulous Fugitives record, it's popular with young collectors now.
Yeah.
Because, young people are getting back into vinyl, and they like funky sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So, your record has the right sound for, you know, younger people playing funk music,
mm-hmm.
and it got reissued on a record label so people can find it still.
Yes.
Although an original is hard to find.
Right. Everything MP3 and Wave.
So I have to ask you, do you have any last words for... Well, first of all, thanks so much for coming up and doing the interview. It was really interesting. And do you have any last words for the listening audience?
Yes. I'm so glad to be able to, first of all, be here and to try to present some of my material to the public. You know, I'm halfway still a spring chicken almost, but I love music, and you don't have to be any special age to enjoy music. And I still want to work in music to please the people, you know. And as I grew, you know, within my skills, I feel like now I would be able to give them more, you know, of what they like, you know. And
so if people should look out for your music.
They should look out for it in some form, you know.
Well, thanks again for coming down and telling your story. It was a great story. And the last record I'm going to play is the B-side of the Fabulous Fugitives record. This is called You Made Me Cry.
Mm-hmm.